Motherfucking All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Jai. Oh, Prabhupada. Okay, so Om Gana Timadanda Shaganjana Shilakya Japsuran Nidhitam Yena Tasmai Shri Ganavaya Namaha. So I'd like to speak a little bit about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his advent or appearance in this world, because the commemoration day is coming up on Thursday, as I mentioned before, at the temple, Radha Gopinanda's temple in Hillsborough, North Carolina. You're all invited. So, before we get into the details about that, I'd like to mention one interesting fact. One is that God is a person. And he has his own life, too. In many religions, God's existence is defined in terms of us. In other words, let's say in the Christian religion, God's purpose, in most cases, is just to pass judgment on us. You know, he either sends us to heaven, Swarga, or hell, Yamadutta Loka. So, but in the Vedic literatures, and when we're talking about the Vedic literatures, we're talking about the Shrutis and the Smritis, the Puranas, the Itihasas, like that, because the Vedic literatures tell us, Itihasa, Purananam, Panchamo Veda, Uchate, that there's the fifth Veda, which is included with the Shrutis, which is the Smritis, Puranas, Itihasas, etc., and Panchatrupi literatures. So, the Vedas tell us that God has his own life, which is interesting. And it doesn't depend on us. So it doesn't really need us around. And in God's own life, he does things, why does he do things? For his own enjoyment. Usually for most of us, and not usually, all the time for us, there's a cause for why we do certain things or feel certain ways. Like, I'm very much into psychology, too, so I know that a certain person acts in a certain way, thinks a certain way, because when they were young, their parents did something to them. Either treat them nice, treat them badly, or encourage them in a certain way. So there's a cause, you know, why are you the way you are? Well, in the past. Or you go into past lives. You know, like if you have some phobia, like if you have claustrophobia, you're afraid of being, you know, enclosed in an elevator. Maybe in your past life you died, someone entombed you at an early age, and you died in such a way. So there's a cause for everything. So when we talk about Krishna, he's the cause of all causes. Sarva karana karana. Not only his existence, his state of existence, vastu, but his psychology, everything he does, he has his own reasons for doing. And his basic reason is he does things because he enjoys. We have to do a lot of things we don't enjoy. For a variety of reasons, you know. A lot of things during the day we don't enjoy doing. Like getting sick and things like that. Nobody enjoys doing that. So, but God does everything for his enjoyment. So when we talk about Krishna's appearance in this world, and we're going to talk about Lord Chaitanya's appearance, and Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, is described in the Vedic literatures. I have a whole series of quotes, which I'm not going to have time to read to you. This is from the Atharva Veda and other Vedas that describe Lord Chaitanya as being Krishna. It's not just our literatures from Bengal, but it's so many literatures. So when Krishna appears, he does things for his own enjoyment. Generally, we hear the explanation, Purushanaya, Sadhanam, Vinachaya, Dushkritam. You know, standard stuff from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna comes to annihilate the miscreants, establish religious principles, protect the devotees. However, I got news for you. He doesn't have to do that. Someone else can do it for him. You know, that Yamaraj is perfectly capable of annihilating the miscreants, and Krishna's devotees, the demigods, they're perfectly capable of helping the devotees in different ways. And Krishna's pure devotees, they're perfectly capable of establishing religious principles, as Prabhupada did. So, these are called the exoteric. There's a fancy word for you. Exoteric means the apparent reasons that everybody knows why God appears. You know, Krishnaya, Sadhanam, Vinishaya, Dushyantam. It's true. But that's not really his internal reason. So whenever Krishna appears, he has internal reasons as well as reasons that we normally think about. I mean, let's take other incarnations of Krishna other than Lord Chaitanya. Let's take Lord Boar, Garaha. Everybody's heard of Lord Boar? That's when Krishna appeared as a boar. A boar is like a pig with big tusks on, a wild pig with tusks. I ran into one once and I was scared. This is before I joined the Krishna conscious movement. I was living in the Bahamas meditating in this deserted island. My family owned this island. And I was meditating, om, om, om. And in the middle of the night, that was the end of my meditation. I was shaking. I couldn't meditate on all night after that. I ran inside and hid myself. So that's what a boar is. So just to give you an idea. And there's also the story of Mahabharata, how a boar almost killed Arjuna, and Arjuna had to kill him, and it was Lord Shiva also. So Krishna appeared as a boar to save the earth planet, right? That's the external exoteric reason. Because the earth planet had been disturbed, and there was this demon, Hiranyaksha, who had to be taken care of, and Krishna fought with him and ultimately killed him. So you may say, okay, Krishna had to come down and do that. However, Krishna wanted to come down to enjoy a good fight. Because in the spiritual world, you can't have such good fights. I mean, there's a little wrestling and stuff like that, but no demons. You talk about demons, you say, oh, there's a demon coming. But it's really not a demon. It's a devotee acting as a demon just to give you a little entertainment there. So Krishna's thinking, like we all have a desire to fight sometimes. Anything that we have is there in the spiritual world in Krishna originally. Because this material world, described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, is a reflection of the spiritual world. So nothing would exist here unless it wasn't there in its original, it was there in its original pure, pristine state in the spiritual world. So Krishna, just like you all like to watch, rugby games or whatever, cricket. Everyone likes cricket here. Recently there was a championship somewhere, wasn't there?
World Cup.
Wow. World Cup. Where was it fought? Who won?
It's still going on. In Australia.
Is India still on the run? Just started. Okay. This is exciting. So you like this cricket. Or, in America we have other games like football and things like that. So those desires are originally there. I'll tell you a funny story about cricket before I continue. I was going around Govardhan Hill, and the children were bothering me for some reason or other, asking me for sweets. And I said to them, I had someone say to them that I was from Australia and I was a cricket player playing, and actually praying to Govardhan before a match. And then the kids offered obeisances to me. So they never bothered me after that. I was like God to them. It's funny, actually. So Krishna enjoys these sporting games too. He plays ball with his friends and teases his friends, and but sometimes he wants a real serious game. And then he came down and he fought with this Hiranyaksha demon. And then, of course, you have Lord Nrsimhadeva appearing to kill Hiranyakashipu. I mean, certainly Krishna could arrange some other means to save Prahlad Maharaj. And also, all right, so that's one reason, exoteric reason. Another important reason, before we get into the esoteric reasons, is that Krishna comes down to show us what he's actually like, which is very important. That's an important reason, too. Because without Krishna coming down and showing us these different pastimes, we wouldn't know what Krishna is like in the spiritual world. We would just imagine. We would engage in something called anthropomorphism. We would project our own particular circumstance on God. You know, God, like we see in many religions, God is a judge. And so all day long, all he has to do is sit on the seat and just pass judgment on people. It's a pretty boring life. You know, hell, heaven, hell, heaven, hell, heaven, hell, hell, hell. I mean, I wouldn't want that job. So anyway, so you just like project your whatever concept you have upon the absolute. Or people think, well, God doesn't have a form because all forms of this world are actually imperfect. They're causing miserable personalities, cause misery. So therefore, God doesn't have a personality. So God comes down to show us what he's actually like, which is another important reason, and attract us to the spiritual realm. So these are all exoteric reasons. And in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has his own exoteric reasons too. He came down to start the Sankirtan movement. He came down to save people, to open up the storehouse of love of God, and which are important reasons nonetheless. You know, Dina Hina Yata Chilo Harina Mudurila, to give everybody love of God, whether they're fallen or high, to create a social revolution too. I mean, as most of you are aware, in India today, and also even more so a few hundred, 500 years ago, there was such a caste system there that people were basically rejected from society if they were lower caste. And that's how other religions like the Muslim religion and the Christian religion flourished so much, because there were people who were outcasts or shudras or lower caste, and they felt they had no place in society, and so the Christians and Muslims said, you know, basically join us and we're all just as good as anyone else. So these Brahmins who established the caste system, of course the Varnashram system was always there. Varnashram means someone's given a duty according to his quality and work. But the Brahmins who established it for, I guess, financial means, so they could be better than other people, so they can exploit other people, then they literally drove people away from the Vedic literatures by doing that. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to show that everybody can basically take up Krishna consciousness and become a pure devotee, like the statement, Dina Hina Yata Chilo Haridam Udurvilo. But he specifically manifested that in terms of some of his followers, like Haridas Thakur. Some of you may know who Haridas Thakur was. He was a devotee who was born in a Muslim family, and he was given the position by Lord Chaitanya to be the main acharya for the chanting of Krishna's names. In fact, he chanted 3 lakhs of names a day. That's a lot of rounds. It's 192 rounds, in case you haven't figured that out. I don't know how many hours it would take. Probably about 22 hours a day. And he was established as practically the foremost preacher, one of the foremost preachers of Krishna consciousness. But many of Lord Chaitanya's followers also came from Brahminical families, and many of them came from different types of families, Kayastha and other families. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was illustrating how everyone is a spirit soul and everyone is entitled to Krishna consciousness, and a real social revolutionary too. That was another purpose of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's coming down, to show that, you know, everybody can become a pure devotee of Krishna and go back to the spiritual world. Not that they have to go through many lives. Like in the Mahabharata, you have this interesting story, the story of the worm. Some of you may have heard this story before. Once upon a time, there was a worm. And this worm was crossing the road very quickly, because worms don't have legs. You know, he was squirming across the road. And as he was squirming across the road, Vyasadeva happened to be there. And he said, "My dear worm, why are you going so quickly across the road?" And the worm said that there's a cart coming, and that means I'm going to get squished. So I don't want to get squished. And Vyasadeva said, "Well, guess what? If you get squished, you're going to take birth in a little higher form in the next life. And a higher form in the life after that. Higher form in the life. Eventually you become a Malecha. Eventually you become a Shudra. Eventually you become a Vaishya. And eventually you become a Kshatriya, you'll take initiation. And you eventually become a Brahmin. And after all these births, as I say, what bonam janmanamante? Yanabhamam prabhajate, vasudeva sarvamuti. Samahatma Sugrubha. After many births, you go back to Godhead. So the worm basically said, Honey ball! And he let himself get squished. And then he moved his way up, and eventually he went back to Godhead. So generally, you know, you have people who preach like that. Even today, you have people who preach like that. Even to me, they'll say, well, the best you can do in your next life is take birth in India as a Shudra, and then after that, you work your way up, and then you'll become a real devotee. I said, thanks a lot. That's very encouraging. The people have actually say that. And, you know, anyway, I don't appreciate that very much. So, but Lord Chaitanya showed that anybody can go back to God. In fact, he even had dogs go back to Godhead. There's two instances. Once when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a young boy, you know, he adopted a puppy. The puppy went back to Godhead. And then there's another instance, the story is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had, one of his associates was taking care of a dog, Jivananda Sen. And that dog ended up in Lord Chaitanya's room in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya was throwing coconut pulp to the dog, and the dog was standing up and chanting Hare Krishna and going back to Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in another instance, was going through a forest in India, the Jharkhanda forest, and the lions and the tigers and the deer and the other animals were standing up and not only chanting, but they were kissing each other. You don't usually find lions or tigers kissing deer. I mean, they use their mouths, but not for kissing, you know, for eating. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not only saving all human beings, but he was saving all the living entities. In fact, there was a discussion with Haridas Thakur where Lord Chaitanya said, how can inanimate living entities be saved? And the answer was, by the loud chanting of Krishna's names. Even the inanimate, like trees and creepers and all that stuff, they can be saved. So Lord Chaitanya was a real revolutionary, not only a social revolutionary in the human species, but he even went beyond speciesism. You know, sometimes people are humanists. A humanist is basically someone who's a speciist. Just like someone who's a racist. We don't like people who are racist, right? Because you only like one race or one country or something like that. And you have chauvinists. You know what chauvinist is? Mm-hmm. Chauvinist things, you know, the men are devotees, the women, they can just roll chapatis. You know, that's a chauvinist. They should not speak until spoken to. So that's a description of a chauvinist. So, but Lord Chaitanya went beyond that. And of course, a speciesist is someone who thinks only human beings are important, and we can exploit all the other creatures. I mean, I was just speaking to someone today, and I was just like shocked by what they were saying. They were telling me how they were eating fish, and how they took the head and they made soup out of the head. And it was just like, I said, oh my God. You know, somehow or other, I found myself speaking to that person. I just like was almost throwing up hearing this description. So a devotee, what is it? Yastu sarvani bhutane atman evanu pashatu sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tatonavi gupshate. That's from the Isha Upanishad. That a devotee sees all living entities as connected, as brothers and sisters. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that. This universal brotherhood, sisterhood, you know, family relationship. Instead of just a small family, whether it's our family, human family, whatever, or certain religion, you know, it's widened our perspective. So we see all living entities as part of the same family. You know, even the insignificant ant is part of our same family. So this is really revolution. I mean, Lord Chaitanya was a complete revolutionary in that way. And he was the first one who started nonviolent protests, too. That the Muslim governor, the cousin, tried to stop his chanting. And he went to his house with thousands of people with torches and basically had a big protest, and the governor finally gave in. For several reasons. That previously Lord Chaitanya had appeared as Lord Nrsingadev in the dream of the governor, and it ripped his chest. So that's a good reason to give him to nonviolent.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly nonviolent, you know. A little bit of threats there. So Lord Chaitanya did so many complete revolutionary things. And then Srila Prabhupada extended that further by coming to the Western world and just making people Krishna conscious in the Western world, which basically people thought that would never happen. And it was interesting how Prabhupada did that. When Prabhupada came to the Western world, he simply sat and chanted. First he tried just preaching, and it wasn't so successful in the beginning, just talking to people about philosophy. But then he sat down and chanted Krishna's names in this place called Tompkins Square Park in New York. You can visit there, it's a tirtha. And then people just, their hearts changed. Because you can't really understand philosophy unless you have a purified heart. So it's the chanting, that's why Prabhupada called the Hare Krishna movement. Even though we have philosophy, what convinces people, what brings people to Krishna consciousness is the chanting of Krishna's names. And that's the avatar of this day and age, the Maha Mantra. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nishteva, 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 Bhakti Ranita. So these are all exoteric reasons. That's what I wanted to start with. Hope I'm not going too late. Anyway, so, and then Lord Chaitanya has his own reasons, Krishna has his own reasons for appearing as Lord Chaitanya, which I'm going to explain by reading a verse, which I brought with me, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. We request you all to get a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, see if it's in Ryan after this class. As a paid advertisement. So he can supply you with Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Lilamrita. Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita. And you'll get credit in the bookstore for it. So I'm going to read a verse, which is a very important verse from the first part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which describes somewhat of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's esoteric reasons, personal reasons. As you mentioned, Krishna always has his personal reasons for coming down. There's a chapter later on that goes into greater depth. So I'll read the Bengali. So Sri Radhaya Pranayam Mahima Kidrisho Vana Yaiva Swadjo Yena Bhuta Madhurima Kidrisho Va Madhiyaha Sokyam Jasya Mad Anu Vavataha Kidrisham Veti Labat Tad Vavad Ya Samakchani Satchigarba Sindhau Harindahu. Desiring to understand the glories of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Srimati Sachi Devi as the moon appears from the ocean. So these are the internal reasons. In other words, Krishna is generally called the Vishaya. You know, he's the enjoyer. He's the supreme enjoyer. And Radharani is the Ashraya. She's the repository or the shelter of bhakti. And if you want to get bhakti, you have to approach Radharani through her sermons. So, the interesting thing is that Radharani experiences something that Krishna doesn't experience. And let's say an extension of that, Krishna's devotees experience something that even God doesn't experience. Like you have something, or people call the Mayavadis who want to become God. You've heard about them before? People say, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, thank God. So, those are Mayavadis. Or everything's Maya, or whatever, you know, and they're pretty bad gods, because they do get sick, you know, they have all sorts of problems, and, you know, financial problems, relationship problems, so, poor excuse. So, why do they want to become God? Because they want to be the center. Ishwaraham, Aham Bhogi, Siddham, Balaham Sukhi, that's from Bhagavad Gita, that's a demoniac consciousness. Yeah, Ishwara, they want to be the controller, perfect power. Everyone wants to be Ishwara, right? Like the man wants to be the Ishwara of his house. He said, I'm the boss here. And he wants his wife to be like Radharani, you know, just whatever I do, you know, my dear husband, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me broken-hearted, you may, whatever it is, you're complete. And if she doesn't act like that, which she never does, then the husband gets very upset. So people want to be that Ishwara. I mean, even if you go to the animals, there's always an Ishwara in every herd. A controller, you know, the head bull or the head oxen or the head whatever it is. So people are thinking, that's really what I want to be. The boss in control. So the interesting thing is, in the spiritual realm, the person who is serving Ishwara has a completely nectarian, more enjoying perspective than the Ishwara does. In other words, Radharani is enjoying more than Krishna, or Krishna's devotees who are working under Radharani, the pure devotees, are enjoying more than Krishna. And Krishna's getting a little transcendentally envious of that. He's thinking, what's happening here? That, and also, Krishna is also a little bit of an egotist. He wants to see himself from the standpoint of his beloved, from her perspective. Just like we may have some false egotism, we look in the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the most attractive sannyasi of them all? Isn't it? That's why in ashrams in India, traditionally, they didn't allow mirrors, because people would always be looking at themselves. Combing their hair. That's why we got rid of the hair. So, least than that. So Krishna wants to see himself. He's an egotist, but it's a good ego. Real ego. Because Krishna is the most attractive. I mean, sometimes Krishna looks at a reflection of himself in a lake or a river and says, wow, who's that attractive person? So Krishna wants to see himself from Radharani's perspective. He wants to enjoy the same enjoyment that she has, and he wants to understand her love. Because Krishna has a hard time understanding pure love for himself. She loves me so much that, let me give you an example, she's willing to go to hell to please me. Because there's that story that most of you heard, that Krishna had a headache, and he said to Narada Muni that the only thing that will cure my headache is the dust from the feet of my devotees. So Narada Muni goes around to all the devotees and they say, what? You want the dust from my feet? No way, because I'm going to go to hell. I mean, nobody's going to put their feet on the deity, or the dust of their feet on the deity. But then he goes to the gopis, and the gopis say, take. And then he says, aren't you afraid of not going to hell? And the gopis say, no. We can go to hell. We just want Krishna's headache to be cured. So Krishna has a hard time. He wants to understand that love. Really, that intense love, the all-sacrificing love, the ecstasy that comes from that love, that not only the gopis, but every pure devotee experiences. You know, Kevalananda Kanda, Bhaja Bhaja Bhai, Chaitanya Nityai. If you worship Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, then you experience Kevala Ananda Kanda. That means only Ananda, unlimited, the path of unlimited love, or ecstasy, sorry. Sachin, you know, we all talk about Sachin Ananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So Krishna is thinking about that, I want to experience these things. And so he takes the mood of Radharani. And that's why Krishna is called Gauranga. Radharani's name, of course, is Gaurangi. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Vade Vrindavaneshwari. Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priya. And so Lord Chaitanya is called Gauranga. And he changes his bodily color because Krishna is normally blackish. Krishna Varam, Trusa Krishna, Sangopagvashra Parshanam. Yanyahi Sankirtana Prayari, Yajantihi Sumedisa. So he takes a non-blackish form. You're normally blackish like the fresh rain cloud, the storm cloud. And then he appears golden colored, Gauranga. And because he has the mood of Radharani, that's why he's so merciful. Because the Radharani, she is the Adi Shakti of the Lord. And she is feminine by nature, and generally the ladies are much more merciful than the men. And generally the ladies are much more religious than the men, too. And so, and soft-hearted. So Lord Chaitanya, as Krishna, before he takes on, Krishna takes on the mood of Lord Chaitanya, he's soft-hearted to an extent, but he definitely says, if you want to go back to Godhead, Sarvadharma and Parichajan, Mame Kam Shiva, you have to surrender. You know, he puts up a, there's a prerequisite. Prerequisite means before you can do anything, surrender. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, you don't have to surrender because he's so compassionate, so merciful in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And therefore he says, you know, just chant Hare Krishna and become Krishna conscious. And that's a special dispensation for the age of Kali. But this dispensation is connected with the mood of Krishna and the mood of Srimati Radharani. So this is his esoteric reason for appearing. So how do we know that Lord Chaitanya is God? Well, as I was mentioning before, there's many verses in the Atharva Veda, that means one of the original four Vedas, and other Vedic literatures, but we see many examples in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, and I'm just going to tell one, and then we'll end class, then we'll take questions. One example that comes to mind, one story that comes to mind, is the story of the Brahmana that was received by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's family when he was young. So the story is as follows. Once upon a time, there was a Brahmana, and he was very, let's say, pure, austere. He'd always just cook for himself. He wouldn't eat what anyone else cooked. And he offered to his little deity, Gopal, and he was chanting what's called the Gopal Mantra, which is one of the lines in the Gayatri Mantra. So he came to the house of Lord Chaitanya's father. Lord Chaitanya's father's name was Jagannath Mishra. And Lord Chaitanya was there. He was like a very young kid, like 3 years old or something. And so he came to the house, and Lord Chaitanya's father, as is the Vedic system, said, you know what, I want to receive you, give you ingredients for cooking, so you cook some rice. The Brahmana was sort of accustomed just to eating raw vegetables and raw roots, because he was wandering in the forest, very austere. So he said, oh, rice, that's very good. I'll cook it and offer it to my Gopal. So he goes in the kitchen, starts to cook this rice, and puts it in front of the altar, in front of his little Gopal. And Lord Chaitanya comes up and he grabs him and starts eating. As soon as the Brahmin began to say his mantra, you know, because when you make an offering, you say a specific mantra. And so the Brahmin has said, you know, he's contaminated the offering. Because obviously the kid, the deity worship is so strict, actually. If you know, someone looks on the offering with lust, you can't offer it at that point. So he says, contaminated the offering. And then Lord Chaitanya's father got a little angry with him, and the Brahmin said, okay, leave him alone, he's just a kid. So just cook again. Lord Chaitanya's father said, just cook again, and here's more ingredients. So the Brahmin began to cook again. That time they locked Lord Chaitanya in another room, so he couldn't come out. And so the Brahmin's cooking, then he began to offer, and somehow the Lord Chaitanya got around all the guards that were guarding him and keeping him in locks on the door, and he ate again. Just when the Brahmin was reciting this mantra to call Krishna. And so the Brahmin said, what can I do? Krishna doesn't want me to eat today. Because if someone's actually spiritual, when things happen again and again, you know, maybe it's an indication from Krishna. If every time you go to offer, some kid eats your food, maybe Krishna doesn't want you to offer. Or maybe Krishna doesn't want your food. Maybe you have the wrong consciousness. Anyway, there's a message to be learned. Everything that happens is under the jurisdiction of Krishna. So then the Brahmin said, I'm just going to eat roots. By this time, it was late at night. And so Lord Chaitanya had a brother. His name was Visvarup. He came home. And Visvarup was considered to be an expansion of Balaram, or an appearance of Balaram, like that. So he convinced the Brahmin, you know, please cook, you know, this is an offense on our part. We're going to go to hell unless you actually eat something in our house. Don't worry, this kid's sleeping. You know, it's like midnight already. And the Brahmin said, it's midnight, I'm not going to cook again. And they convinced him. So he started to cook. And he was thinking, well, this time I'm actually going to get a chance to eat and offer. So everyone was sleeping in the house. In fact, the goddess Nidra, you know, made sure that everyone was sleeping. So he began to offer again. And then, guess what? Lord Chaitanya, as a little baby, began to crawl up and started to eat the offering. The Brahmin said, he's done it again. But nobody woke up at that point. And then Lord Chaitanya said to him, as a little baby, you're calling me to eat. So what do you expect, you know? You know, if you call someone, he comes and eats. You know, what's the problem with it? And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested an 8-arm form in front of this Brahmin. I mean, that's God. That's God, you know. God means people who, someone who can lift Govardhan Hill with a pinky of his left hand or manifest an 8-arm form. And that 8-arm form was the normal for 4 symbols of Vishnu. And then 2 hands, Lord Chaitanya manifests himself as Krishna holding a flute, and the other 2 hands like eating butter. You know, Krishna is known as Makhan Chor. He's a butter thief and he likes butter. So the Brahmin was just like overwhelmed, amazed, and he started dancing in ecstasy, you know, throwing the rice all over the place. And then, of course, everyone remained asleep for a while. And then Lord Chaitanya said, don't reveal this to anyone while I'm still on the planet, but you can come and see me every day. And then Lord Chaitanya went back to his room and the Brahmin kept being in ecstasy. And then people woke up and thought, wow, because he's finally eaten, he feels happy. But they didn't know the truth. So there were many, many instances of this. So these are further proofs of Lord Chaitanya's godhood. You know, being able to show yourself as Lord Vishnu, Krishna, eating butter, etc. like that. As well as Vedic proofs, which I mentioned before from different Vedic literatures. So that's why we're assured, because we have to base everything on Shastra. It's not that we just come up with some person who declares himself to be God. I mean, there's so many imitation gods. I remember when I was a young boy in the 1960s and 70s, there were so many imitation gods came from India. I mean, even now, probably would say that practically every week there's a god coming from India. And even we had one god come from Korea. Isn't it? Yeah, some of you may remember that. I'm not going to mention who it was. And they all did miss it. There was one god who came from America. And what happened is this god fell in love with his secretary and ran away. And his mother got very upset, went to court in India and declared, that son is not God, but my other son is God. So, you know, God is not something cheap. You must really do something like lifting Govardhan Hill. And must be predicted in the Vedic literatures. Like Lord Chaitanya's name is there, his mother's name, his father's name, where he appeared, all in the original Shrutis, like that. So that's why we accept, you know, that's called epistemology. How do you know what you know? Or why do you accept what you accept? And that's why we accept Lord Chaitanya's God. And we worship Lord Chaitanya. And one who worships him by the chanting of the Lord's holy names can easily achieve spiritual perfection. Okay. So any questions or comments than anything I said? Or problems, yes.
So do we follow whatever Vedic scripture says? So in case we want to, like, if we are in a discussion with some friend or somebody who is an atheist or kind of an atheist.
Yeah.
So he would ask for, like, what is the proof that the Vedic scripture are true?
What is the proof of the Vedic scripture? Like, Prabhupada will often say, the proof of the pudding is in the taste. In other words, if you practice what the Vedic scriptures advocate, you know, how does one have faith? I mean, let's rephrase that question. How do we have faith in the Vedic literatures? One is, if you practice what they advocate, you experience the result. Just like when I was studying science, you know, one of the things I did in high school was that I made water from hydrogen and oxygen. You know, you learn the theory. Isn't it? You have 2 parts. You have the laboratory, and you have the theory. So the theory was that 2 parts hydrogen, 1 part oxygen makes water. So I said, well, let me try to see if it works. Because there was a little explosion in the meantime. But because if you're not careful, combining hydrogen with oxygen, you're going to end up with an explosion. But there was water. And so you can experiment. You can see. Not only can you experiment, but you can see the results of other people. This is what increased my faith in Krishna consciousness, is seeing those who followed, they became saintly. You can see people making tent, just like you can see someone growing up by measuring their height every few weeks, you know, a young kid, against a measuring sticker against the wall. So that's one proof. And also, as Krishna says, as Arjuna says, sorry, in the Bhagavad Gita, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Kavicham, Purusham, he says, Ahustvam Rishayak Sarve Devarshir Naradas Tada. That other great personalities such as Narada, Vyasa, Asita, Devala, they accept Krishna as the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Truth. So there's both the practice, there's the Shastra, there's other devotees or other great personalities, and you put them all together and you try it. And you experience it. I can personally say that, you know, I've experienced Krishna consciousness by practice. And of course, it grows every day. You experience more and more. You experience Satchit Ananda. Freedom from fear. So many things come as a result of Krishna consciousness. Happiness, isn't it? I mean, I'm a personal example of that. You know, I've been practicing since 71. And it gets better all the time. It's not boring. I get bored of everything else. And I tell you, everything I do, I get bored with. I mean, just like recently, to take pictures, I'll give you a funny story, to take pictures of the Holy Dham, I got myself a helicopter, quadcopter, drone. That's why I'm called Dronacharya. So after a while, I got bored with it, flying around, taking pictures, it's nice, Hare Krishna. Sorry, Mahamantra. He got it from me as a present. So, I still have it. And then, see, what do they say? Seen it, done it, been there, whatever. But Krishna consciousness gets ever fresh. I'm chanting the same Hare Krishna mantra every day. You try that with any other mantra. You try chanting, your national anthem every day for 2 hours. See what it does for you. Even your favorite Bollywood song or movies, watch it again and again and again and again and again and again. See how ecstatic it is. And then, but Krishna Mantra, it's wonderful, And it's not that I had nothing before I came to Krishna. I came from a very well-to-do family. We had boats, I had my own airplane. Now, not just a drone, an airplane that I could get into and fly. And then, but all that becomes very dry in comparison to the happiness we experience in Krishna consciousness. So, these are all proofs that it works. Proof of the pudding is in the tasting. So, I'm practical proof, and all these devotees, they're practical proofs that it's real. So, but the question you ask is a very important question. How do you know what you know? It's called epistemology. How do you know what you know? Why do you have faith in what you have faith in? And it worked. People were becoming saintly. People were developing this similar qualities to Srila Prabhupada. Not the same level, but similar qualities to Srila Prabhupada. And, I very much enjoy associating with all these devotees from around the world who... from different places, and it's just very enjoyable. I just was with one of my friends from Russia the other day in Govardhan. It's very enjoyable meeting with these great saintly persons. All right? Yeah.
Rishikesh? Yeah, just normally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worshipped always Krishna himself.
Yeah.
He never appreciated someone calling him Krishna.
Yeah.
But typically in our Gaura Sampradayas, we worship him as a, with full opulence.
Full opulence, yeah.
Not as a devotee. Why is it that way?
Can you repeat?
The question is, he's asking, we worship Lord Chaitanya in full opulence as God, even though he generally liked to just be treated as a devotee. In fact, at the final stage of his life, he was manifesting the pastimes, not just life, his pastimes, of being a sannyasi, an extremely renowned sannyasi. I mean, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not even take a bed to lie down on. He was lying down on the ground. And then some of his followers wanted to make a cushion for him, and he rejected it. And then finally they had to take some ripped banana leaves and put them inside one of his old dhotis. And then he lay on that. So, extremely renounced. And at the same time, we worship him as God. So, the answer is that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes, he was showing us, by example, how a sannyasi should act. But also, when he was in his grahastha pastimes, he did accept a lot of opulence. In fact, if you read about his marriage, it was quite an opulent marriage. So devotees don't want to worship the Lord. That's their mood. And in a renounced way. It's not that you should have Lord Chaitanya on the altar and give him a danda and just dress him in a kopin. You know, just a very short dhoti, you know, ripped or something like that, and don't give him a bed at night. Because we like to worship Krishna, and we want him to be the enjoyer, to enjoy. And Lord Chaitanya appreciates that. He appreciates being worshipped in that mood. But personally, he came to set a mood of renunciation, or a standard of renunciation in order to teach us how to act ourselves. Vairagya vijanija bhakti yoga shiksharta eka purusha pramana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Surira Dhari Kripam Budhir Yastama Hambravadye. That's a verse written by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. It says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us about renunciation and knowledge. Gave us knowledge and renunciation from this world. Now, renunciation is appropriate according to one's ashram status. So when Lord Chaitanya was a householder, it was more opulent. But as a sannyasi, like that. And Lord Chaitanya demanded that of a sannyasi being renounced. He didn't like... He said, when he was asked by Raghunath Das Goswami, I'm not trying to scare you off from taking sannyasi, but he was asked, what is the duty of a sannyasi? Lord Chaitanya responded that a sannyasi should not wear fine clothes, should not eat opulent food, should not think of women even in dreams, and should always think of Krishna as heart of hearts. So that's a sannyasi's dharma. Of course, for preaching Krishna consciousness, sometimes we have to not change that directive, but adjust certain things. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to come here just dressed in a kopin. It just wouldn't be appropriate. Plus, it's pretty cold out. so for spreading Krishna consciousness, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave us the example of how to do that in terms of the sannyas dharma. A practical example of Vairagya Vidya. And Lord Chaitanya's associate, Rupa Goswami, taught us Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya means to accept whatever is favorable for preaching or bringing people to Krishna and reject everything that's unfavorable. So at that time, Lord Chaitanya taking that mood was favorable for bringing the Krishna people to Krishna consciousness. Okay, so any other questions? Yes. Just
One comment on what you made. One of our god brothers actually went to Prabhupada early on, and he got two Lord Chaitanya, deities, and he had
this
for them and no... bald heads. And Prabhupada said, no, we do not want to think of Lord Chaitanya like this. We want to worship him in his opulent mood when he's a householder. Just like the barber was crying so hard, much when he was shaving his head.
Yeah.
We don't want to see him renounced. We want to see him enjoy.
Yeah, we don't want to see God, sleeping on the floor. We want to give him as much opportunity. That's our mood, and Lord Chaitanya appreciates that. And his mood of renunciation was to teach us something. That was the point. I also did the same thing with the danda. I hate to say that. When I was taking care of Gaurdvaj deities many, many years ago, I gave Lord Chaitanya a danda. I didn't shave his head. But I didn't understand. I was just a new devotee at that time.
This other devotee is new too. And he thought, look at this problem. No, it's not what we want to do.
Yeah.
The other question we had.
And Prabhupada is a sannyasi, you know, performed marriages, arranged marriages, and did so many things. So the whole idea is whatever's necessary to bring people to Krishna consciousness. I mean, there are restrictions as far as the ashram is concerned, but not as strict as Lord Chaitanya himself enacted. So, yes, we have a question back there.
I'm just curious, what would you say is the relation of the Vedas to the Bhagavad Gita? Because on one hand, the Vedas are hold a lot of important knowledge.
Yes.
But on the other hand, the Bhagavad Gita, I think there's a verse in there that warns to not see the Vedas in a very...
The flowery words of the Vedas, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. Like, the Vedas are mainly, according to Krishna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nish Trigunya Vivarjana, Nirdvandvo Nichasapushto, Nityogacchemadvam. The Vedas are perfect, pure, they emanate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead's breathing. But they're mainly meant for people. We're talking about, let's say, the Rig Veda, Tarva Veda, Sama Veda, etc. They're mainly meant for people who are involved in this world who are not yet taking up the pure spiritual path. Because most people in this world, they want something in this world. That's why we came here. We were originally Krishna conscious entities. We're eternal spirit souls. And we came here because we want to enjoy separate from God. In other words, we saw that God was the center, we want to be the Ishwara. That's also described in Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, the Vedas are very merciful. They give us different prescriptions for how to try to be the Ishwara in this world. There's, you know, the Karmakanda section, the Gyanakanda section. There's many different sections, you know, ritualistic sacrifices. But 90% of them are for material purposes. You know, you find this, what's called a palashruti. Palashruti means the fruit of the shruti. You know, you find after many parts of the Vedic literatures, it says, if you do this, you'll get this. That's the fruit. And so, there are, in the original Vedas, injunctions to worship Krishna. I mean, you have this famous verse in the Rig Veda, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Tada Pashanti Yat Surya. All the demigods are looking to Vishnu. You have indications about Krishna, the coward boy, in the original Vedas, too. But most of them are meant for people who are just materialistically inclined to gradually let them become elevated. I mean, there's even injunctions in the Vedas. If someone wants to eat meat, how to do it. And you're supposed to go once a month to the goddess Kali, and you offer the goat, and you say, Mamsa Kadati, which indicates... In the next life, you'll get a chance to meet me, too, which is quite discouraging. I mean, it's not the same thing as going to the supermarket, you know, like Walmart supermarket or something like that, and purchasing some chicken or something like that. Imagine every time you ate a chicken, you have to say, next life, I'm going to be a chicken. It'd be kind of discouraging. So the Vedas allow this. There's even some injunctions that allow liquor drinking like that. But this is to restrict sense gratification, to allow people to gradually advance. Just like the government originally enacted laws to license liquor houses to restrict it, understanding that people are going to do it anyway. I mean, during the 1920s in America, we had this thing called prohibition. Anyone's heard of that before? Prohibition was a time when liquor was not allowed at all legally in America. But guess what people did? They turn their bathtubs into stills. In India, they do that too. Of course, many people, I was reading the other day, many people die because they make the wrong type of alcohol. There's people die, whole villages die.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time it happens. So, but people are going to drink alcohol. I mean, you've got to be real about this world. People are going to do things that are not on the spiritual path. They're going to drink alcohol, they're going to eat meat. So why not regulate it a little bit so they're not doing it everywhere and, you know, with everyone? So you regulate it a little bit, and the Vedas are meant for doing that. That's Trigunya Vishaya Veda, for the three modes of nature. And then Krishna, of course, says to Arjuna, but those things are not meant for you. Arjuna is trying to use Vedic injunctions to justify his not fighting in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, you know, that's not meant for you. Nistragunya Bhavarjuna, rise above, that you're meant to be above the modes of nature. Nirdwangol Niprasadvastho. Don't be absorbed in the duality of this world. Be established in the self. Yoga Kshemaatma Bhan. So the Vedas are meant for that. They're all perfect. They're all pure. And just like you have in a drugstore, what you call it, I think in India you call it a chemist or something like that. What you have in a chemist or drugstore, you have all different drugs, and there's a different drug for different people that have to be prescribed by the proper doctor. And so, but ultimately, Krishna says, Vedesh Shasave Rahami Vavedyo, by all the Vedas I'm to be known. Because what is the purpose? You know, let's get to the purpose of the Vedas. Rather than just seeing the Vedas, what do they say? Not seeing the forest for the trees. Sometimes you just see all the trees, you don't understand what it, the whole totality of the forest. So the purpose of the Vedas is to gradually elevate yourself, accepting the authority, a higher authority, so ultimately you come to Krishna consciousness. And that's what the Puranas are meant for. Especially in Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga, you have people who can read the Vedic literatures and not really understand what's going on. I mean, for example, even the Mahabharata, you can read it over and over and over again. You may not understand that Krishna is God, even though the Gita is contained within there. So you need these other literatures. Let's talk about a story that's there in the Bhagavatam, that Srila Vyasadeva had compiled the Vedic literatures and even written the Mahabharata, but he was feeling very dissatisfied because the people would use that information to actually engage in material affairs, to justify material affairs, like you find in the Mahabharata, there's so many material injunctions. And he was chastised by his guru, Narada Muni, who said to him, are you satisfied by encouraging people to identify the body as the self? And eventually he understood, I mean, not eventually, immediately he understood that he should compose a literature that only dealt with pure devotional service, and that was the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana. So, anyway, the Bhagavad Purana is the culmination. The Bhagavad Purana, in one sense, is considered to be the commentary, a Vaishnava commentary in the Vedanta Sutra. And the Vedanta Sutra is a commentary on the Upanishads. And the Upanishads are very difficult to understand. Very, very difficult to understand. Although, if you read them very carefully, you maybe begin to understand. So you need the Vedanta Sutra, you need the Bhagavatam to understand the Upanishads. So, any other questions? Yes?
You mentioned early in your discourse that God has life. Can you please elaborate?
God has
life, you said.
God is a person, I said. God is a person with his own desire and his own life, yeah. And Krishna's life is there in the spiritual world, and there's various planets in the spiritual world. You have Goloka Vrindavan, which Krishna has his most intimate relationships in, and then you have the Vaikuntha planets, where Krishna manifests himself as Narayan, the four-armed form. And he has his own life, his own friends, girlfriends, boyfriends, mother, father, and he's just enjoying life like that. He's on vacation all the time. I mean, there's that story Prabhupada told, and some of you may have heard, that there was one Englishman who walked into a Hindu temple once. And as we know, in many Hindu temples, there's different deities. There's a whole bunch of them. You know, there's Durga, there's Ganesh, there's Lord Shiva. You may have other ones too, Kartikeya, another deity. So there was like 10 different altars. And there was Krishna and Radharani also. So the Englishman walks in, and he looks at all the altars and he points out Radha and Krishna. He says, well, that's God. And the priest didn't know which one was God. Somehow or other. Anyway, I guess he was interested in making money. So, you know, some deity for everybody. So he said to the Englishman, how do you know that's God? And the Englishman responded saying, that everyone else on the altars is working. You know, he's meditating, doing something. But here's the person who's enjoying with his girlfriend. That must be God. just like Prabhupada one time was with one of my godbrothers, His name is Ambarish, that's an initiated name, but he's Henry Ford's great-grandson. And so they were driving by the Ford Motor Company in Detroit, and that's when Detroit was a great city. And the devotees asked this person, is that where you work? And then Prabhupada said, no, he doesn't work there, he's the proprietor. He doesn't have to work. So, in other words, God doesn't have to work, he's on vacation all the time. He doesn't have to do anything. He just does what he wants to do 24/7. That's the definition of God. So that means he has his own life. And he enjoys it. And what he enjoys, what he really enjoys is loving exchanges with his devotees. It's not that God needs anything. It's not that, you know, he needs more pakoras. Because he has plenty, Lakshmi Shahasra Sata Sambramasa Yumana. He has plenty of Lakshmis doing all sorts of nice things, cooking for him in the spiritual world. He doesn't need anything. So what do they say? What do you give the man who has everything? You give him love. So what Krishna is hankering for is our love. And that's what he really enjoys, if you ask me. Loving exchanges with his devotees of these four different varieties that we mentioned before. And Krishna wants that so much that he comes down to this material world. He incarnates just so he can bring us back. He wants us back with, and that's real love. He doesn't need us, but he wants us because he loves us. And so, you know, the spiritual world is just based on love. And what can I say? I mean, all you need is love. So I was appreciating that. I mean, I was watching this Mahabharata film, the new Mahabharata Star TV film. And I was seeing how the Pandavas, the five Pandavas, anyone seen this film? I'm sure you all have. How they had such a nice, loving relationship with each other. You know, they were always bonded with each other, with Kunti Devi. You seen this in the movie? Any of you seen the film? None of you seen this? It's a series, Star TV.
I saw some couple of them.
Yes. It's a Bollywood film. It's nice. But I was appreciating how the Pandavas, they were just so close with each other and loving and ready to sacrifice for their mother and for themselves. And I was thinking, this is the way the spiritual world is. And this is what Krishna enjoys. These loving relationships, you know, without any harshness or anything like that. So, any other questions? Because it's late. Well, yes.
You mentioned about the dogs going back to Godhead.
Yes.
But it is also said that only one form of life is the way to achieve salvation. So.
Yes. Generally, that's the case. There's a rule and there's exceptions to the rule. And especially when one's in touch with Lord Chaitanya, there can be exceptions. I can't get dogs to go back to Godhead. I can't get lions and tigers to chant. I tried it at the Asheville Zoo. Asheville Zoo. You know, I tried it. You know, I said, Hare Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. And So I'm incapable of that stuff. I basically just deal with human beings. You know, if I see an animal, I'll chant to it. So Lord Chaitanya specifically was like, yes, what you're saying is actually true. But there are exceptions to the rule, and Lord Chaitanya was able to do that. God can do anything. I can't do it, you can't do it, and generally most devotees I know can't do that. Maybe Nitya Narayan can do that. But Prabhupada, you know, tell me about a miracle. Prabhupada taught how he was able to change the Western people. He said changing hippies to happies is a real miracle. In other words, people couldn't believe that he was taking people from the West who were in the most degraded situation and turning them into Vaishnavas. And that's how Prabhupada really kick-started his movement in India. That he brought the Western devotees back and put them on display. He called them his dancing white elephants. But he put them on display and people went, wow, that's a miracle. And these people... And many people in India were thinking, But we wanted to go to the West, and they'd given everything up. And Prabhupada would sometimes in his lectures talk about how these Western devotees came from such opulent families. You know, very rich families, and gave it up. And people said, wow, sounds like the movement for me. So Prabhupada was an expert strategist, too. I mean, the devotee, that's one of the qualities of a devotee. Daksha, he was very expert in different things. So, I think it's time for prasadam, right? So, thank you very much. All glory is to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ki Jai.